All right, go ahead and open up to Psalm 37 and verse 21. We are more than halfway through Psalm 37 now. There's 40 verses. Psalm 37 and verse 21. And the one thing I like about, one of the things that I like about this psalm is that it does cover such a vast array of topics. So we're going to be totally switching gears here for a week. It says Psalm 37:21, the wicked borroweth and payeth not again, but the righteous showeth mercy and giveth. And it's sort of, it's interesting, it ties in with what I was talking about on Sunday somewhat, but not really. I'm going to be talking about different things today, but the idea, the topic of giving comes up here, and like I've said many times, I don't organize it this way, but it just seems like things converge. And then in the blogs that I'm writing, now I'm up to Proverbs 3:9, which is the very verse that I was talking about on Sunday. So I'm just like, I just got done preaching on this, and now I'm going verse by verse through Proverbs 3, and people are going to think that I have nothing else on my mind or something. But so anyway, whatever. I guess they can think what they're going to think. Psalm 37 and verse 21. I already read it. Okay, so the wicked borroweth and payeth not again. So there's two parts to this verse that we want to look at. We want to look at the idea of borrowing and not paying again and how wicked people do that. And then we want to talk about giving to the poor. So borrowing and giving to the poor are the two main themes in this verse. So the wicked borroweth and payeth not again. It is a characteristic of a wicked man not to pay his debts. So if you have to be in debt, you better pay your debts, right? And it is... people that are not good people are people that would borrow money from a friend or a neighbor or a parent or something and just not pay back. Chances are you're not going to just relinquish paying your debt to the bank because they'll come after you. But borrowing it from a friend or a neighbor or a parent or so on, some people just think that the world just owes it to them or their family owes it to them or whatever. And that's an evil thing to do. If you do borrow money, you always want to pay it back. We shouldn't postpone paying debts when we have the means to pay them. Proverbs 3 and verse 28. And I know that this is a common theme too, where, yeah, I have a bunch of money saved up, but I may as well just not pay off my debts and leave the money in the bank and, you know, let interest rates are cheap or whatever, but that's not a good attitude to have either. If you have the money by you, you ought to pay the debts. That's not to say that you should get yourself in a financial position where you have no safety net or something like that. But if you can pay him, you ought to pay him. Proverbs 3 and verse 28 says, say not unto thy neighbor, go and come again, and tomorrow I will give thee when thou hast it by thee. So in this case, this guy had borrowed something from the neighbor, borrowed some money from him, and the neighbor says, hey, where's my money? He's like, oh, come back tomorrow. I'll get it to you tomorrow. But he has it. He could pay him. He just didn't feel like it. Maybe he wants to spend the money on something else or whatever. So that's a wicked thing to do, and we don't want to be guilty of that. Of course, we know that debt is slavery in Proverbs 22 and verse 7. Been over this verse a time or two, where it says, the rich ruleth over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. It's funny, we think in this country now we're free, and slavery ended, you know, back in the mid-1800s, and yet the country as a whole is completely indebted. I mean, the average person is just in debt up to their eyeballs. But we think we're free. It's kind of like what we're talking about tonight with the voting being the illusion of choice and really you're in bondage. It's the same thing where they've got us in such a good position, us collectively, where we think we're free. It's like the Pharisees said, you know, we've never been in bondage to any man. And Jesus, what are you talking about? You're in bondage to the Romans right now. You're under the thumb of the Romans. He didn't say that, but that was the case.
Right.
And so, I mean, there's none. How's the saying go?
So hopelessly enslaved as those who think
they're free. That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know who said that? Mm-hmm. I don't either. But it's a good one. That's the quote I'm thinking of.
I just said it.
Yeah. What did you? What you didn't make it up though.
No, but I did just.
That came out of your subconscious mind, I think. But anyway. So of course Christians should try to stay out of debt as much as possible. Because you got Proverbs 22:7, which says that the borrower is servant to the lender, or you could say slave to the lender. And then in 1 Corinthians 7:23, Paul tells us to not be servants of men. And Paul says that if you have an opportunity, if you are a servant or a slave, and you can be free, then go ahead and do it. Let's see here, 1 Corinthians 7, verse 23. 1 Corinthians 7:23. I don't know if it was in the same passage where he says that or not. 1 Corinthians 7:23. Let me see here. I thought he said... Yeah, verse 21. That's the verse I was thinking of. Art thou called being a servant? Care not for it. But if thou mayest be free, use it rather. So it's not an optimum position to be a servant. If you can be free, then get free of it. Verse 23, you're bought with a price. Be not ye the servants of men. So this would go in a spiritual sense and in a financial sense or in any sense. We don't want to be the servants of men if we can help it. Romans 13 and verse 8 is just a simple little verse which says, owe no man anything but to love one another, for he that loveth another hath fulfilled the law. So the optimum state to be is in a state where you don't owe anybody anything. And then you're ultimately free, because you're free to move where you want. You're free to do what you want. You're not strapped down. And so it's a liberation, liberating feeling. In Proverbs, it teaches that Christians should get themselves established in a career and save up money before building the house, right? So that you can look at this in a spiritual sense or in a natural sense. In Proverbs 24 and verse 27, I think Chris is wise in that regard. He's getting himself established, he's saving money and not going into debt, and trying to get ahead while he can when he's young and single and all that. That's very wise. Proverbs 24 and verse 27, prepare thy work without, and make it fit for thyself in the field, and afterwards build thine house. We get everything backwards now, because we've been raised in this mentality that we have to have whatever we want now, and there's no waiting for a delayed gratification. It has to be instant, and we think that we ought to have what our parents have when we're first starting out, and it doesn't work that way. There's a guy, I listened to a guy, he's a motivational type personal development guy. What was his name? John Maxwell. And he's got some good stuff. I got to kind of filter him, but he's got a lot of good stuff. But I just remember one thing that he said. He said a guy came up to him, because he's very successful, very good speaker. He pastored these huge mega churches, and then now he goes around, he does the motivational speaking, and he writes books and all that stuff. And driven, successful, all that. And some guy at one of his conferences said that, I want to do what you do. And he said, but do you want to do what I did? Because, yeah, it's easy to look at me now speaking to thousands of people and telling you how to get your life straightened out. But do you want to do what I did? Do you want to put the 20 or 30 years or whatever he did to get to where he is now to be able to teach people that stuff? So a lot of people want to do what others do, but not what they did. Now, as Christians, we should be the ones that are loaning money, not borrowing it. And this is what the Lord taught Israel. In Deuteronomy 15 and verse 6, this was part of Israel's blessing, that if Israel would do what they were supposed to do, and if they would follow the Lord faithfully and keep his commandments, then they would not be a debtor nation, they would be a creditor nation. They would be loaning money to people and not borrowing it from people. And just think about the United States, okay? The borrower is servant to the lender, right? Be ye not servants of men. And our country has a 20 trillion, 21? I don't know if it's 21 yet, but $20 trillion debt. We owe all kinds of people all over the place a whole ton of money. Like, a ton would not even be accurate. All the money we owe somebody, even $100 bills, would be literally tons and tons and tons of money. So by that measure, we are a cursed nation. And I'll show you the verse I'm talking about, which will show that. I will show you that we are not a blessed nation just by our balance sheet. We'll tell you that. Deuteronomy 15 and verse 6. Deuteronomy 15 and verse 6. It says, for the Lord thy God blesseth thee, as he promised thee, and thou shalt lend unto many nations, but thou shalt not borrow, and thou shalt reign over many nations, but they shall not reign over thee. Now, we think USA, we're at the top, we're reigning over the world. But are we? Are we really reigning over the world when we're $20 trillion in debt and we owe China trillions of dollars and we owe Russia billions of dollars and we owe Japan trillions of dollars? Are we really on the top? I mean, who's really pulling the strings here? And if we are, how long is that going to last? You know, how long is the guy that takes credit cards and pays a bunch of thugs to go and beat up all of his neighbors? How long is that going to last, right? You can only pay thugs on a credit card for so long and run a mafia in your neighborhood before eventually nobody's going to give you any more credit cards, right? The credit cards get maxed out and the bank says, wait a minute, you have no income and a whole ton of debt. And all of a sudden, then what are these thugs going to do that are being mafia in the neighborhood? They're going to turn around and come back on you, right? Well, what's going to happen to us? I can tell you, I'll read to you what's going to happen to us. Let's look at Deuteronomy 28 and verse 12. This is another verse that shows that the blessed nation will not be borrowing money, but be loaning it. Deuteronomy 28 and verse 12 says, "The Lord shall open unto thee his good treasure, the heaven, to give the rain unto thy land in his season, and to bless all the work of thine hand, and thou shalt lend unto many nations, and shalt not borrow." This is the chapter of the blessings and the cursings. So this is part of the blessings. And the Lord gets down, I think he gives blessings for, how far does he go down here? I don't remember where he switches, but anyway, down to about verse 15 or so. So for the first part of the chapter, he's telling them that you're going to be blessed in the city, you're going to be blessed in the country, your land's going to be blessed, you're going to be blessed in agriculture, you're going to have all these blessings, your storehouses are going to be full if you follow the Lord and keep his commandments. But if you turn, then it's cursed, 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 cursed. Everything that was going to be a blessing will be turned around to be a curse. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but let's just go down to verse 44. We see that part of Israel's curse for their wickedness would be, instead of being a creditor nation, they're going to be a debtor nation now. Deuteronomy 28 and verse 44. It says, "And he shall lend to thee, and thou shalt not lend to him. He shall be the head, and thou shalt be the tail." The head is the powerful part of the animal, right? The part that controls the animal, right? The tail is just the part that follows, basically, and doesn't really do much of anything. I guess you can tell when the tail's wagging if he's happy, or if it's between his legs, he's mad. But other than that, the tail's not all that impressive. They were going to be borrowing instead of lending. Now, if a Christian does borrow money, he should keep his word and he should pay it back according to the terms of the loan. So I'm not in favor of bankruptcy, even though it is legal, right? But it's not a godly thing to do, especially if you did it on purpose, where you ran up debts and then just walked away from them and filed bankruptcy. That's not right. You should pay them back according to the terms of the loan. Now, if you take out a loan on a house or something, and the housing prices are really high, and the loan says that the house goes back to collateral for the bank if you default on it or something, I mean, technically, you're keeping the deal, right? The bank takes the house and so on. Not a good idea, but at least you haven't really committed fraud in that case because you have kept the contract, whatever that contract was. But we ought to be men of our words, and we ought to keep whatever contracts and terms that we agree to. Another way in which a man can borrow and not pay is by borrowing somebody's labor and then not paying them for it. In other words, not paying somebody for a job that they do for you, whether you're an employer or whether you just personally hire somebody to do work at your house or something. That's another way of borrowing and not paying. You're borrowing labor and not paying for it. This could be by not paying one's employees. I got some examples of that. If you look in James 5 and verse 4, James 5, in verse 4. I'll tell you what, and before I get into that, just there's another way which you can also borrow and not pay, and that is by running the printing presses too. Because we borrow money from China, right, when the dollar is worth a dollar. And then we run the printing presses to pay back that money, and we devalue that money to where a dollar is only worth 75 cents or 50 cents or something, and then you pay them back in this money that's not worth as much, that won't buy as much. So in a sense, you have not paid them back. You've paid them back with bills that say the same number on them, but they won't buy as much, right? So inflation is another way of robbing people of money that you've borrowed from them. James 5 and verse 4. The Lord says, he's condemning, by the inspiration of the Lord, is writing to rich men here, and he's condemning them. These are wicked rich men. He says, behold, the hire of the laborers who have reaped down your fields, which is kept back by fraud, crieth, and the cries of them which have reaped are entered into the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth. So these men were hiring people, and then they were not paying them, and they could get away with it because they're rich and powerful. We still have something like this today. It's called the income tax, right? Because the income tax, for most people, gets taken out of your check before you see it. So you work, you agree to work for $20 an hour, and then you get a paycheck, which is only the equivalent of $15 an hour or whatever, $18 an hour or something. They kept that other money back by fraud. They didn't give it to you. It is yours. And if the government wants to claim it, then you should be able to pay them at the end. But that's why we still have an income tax today. Because if you didn't have the payroll deductions, like the, I forget what they call it, but yeah, the withholding. If you didn't have the withholding taxes, and people like me and like people that are self-employed, if you had to write a check to the government at the end of the year, I guarantee you that there would be a popular uprising. People would not put up with it when you're writing checks for thousands of dollars at the end of the year. But when it gets taken out of your check and you don't see it, and you don't notice it as much, it's a lot easier to, keep the people from resisting. So it was a genius idea. I mean, the automatic withholding is this. I mean, these people are clever. I give that to them. The Lord prevented the same thing back there in the Old Testament, Deuteronomy 24, 14 through 15, where in those days, when you hired somebody, you paid them for the work at the end of that day. It wasn't 2 weeks or a month. It was you got paid when you did work. The sun didn't go down before you got paid. And we've certainly gotten away from that. Deuteronomy 24, 14 through 15. For the Lord thy God walketh in the midst of the camp to deliver thee. Oh, that's 23, 14. Let's see, 24, 14. Thou shalt not oppress an hired servant that is poor and needy, whether he be of thy brethren or of thy strangers that are in thy land within thy gates. At his day thou shalt give him his hire, neither shalt the sun go down upon it, for he is poor and setteth his heart upon it, lest he cry against thee unto the Lord, and it be sin unto thee. So this poor guy, he needs this money today. He can't wait 2 weeks for it or a month for it. He needs it now. And they were not allowed to withhold that money past that day. Somebody does work for you, you pay him that day. That's the way it was back in the Old Testament. Let's look at Leviticus 19 and verse 13. Leviticus 19 and verse 13. And then I got some good stuff coming up for you here about giving to the poor. Leviticus 19 and verse 13. It says, thou shalt not defraud thy neighbor, neither rob him. The wages of him that is hired shall not abide with thee all night until the morning. The Lord considers that robbery. To hire somebody and not pay them at the end of the day is robbery, according to God in the Old Testament. Let me give you one more. Malachi 3 and verse 5. Malachi 3 and verse 5. Lord says, and I will come near to you to judgment, and I will be a swift witness against the sorcerers and against the adulterers and against false swearers and against those that oppress the hireling of his wages, the widow and the fatherless, and that turn aside the stranger from his right, and fear not me, saith the Lord of hosts. The Lord will come down in judgment. And look at people here that hold back wages from somebody that works for them, and see how God lumps them in with some really wicked people, like sorcerers, adulterers, false swearers. These are, I mean, we're talking about evil people here. Adultery, that's a heinous crime, Job said. Sorcerers, God put sorcerers to death in the Old Testament. False swearers, false accusers. And he says also them that oppress the hireling of his wages. Them that are poor just because they can, because they have the power over them. So we don't ever want to be guilty of that. Most of us aren't employers, but I'm sure we've all hired somebody to do something for us. And just remember, you want to pay up. This could also be taking advantage of a neighbor or a friend by using his service and not paying for it. Look at Jeremiah 22 and verse 13. Now, I'm not saying that we should be paid for everything that we do. I'm not saying that at all. And whenever you're close friends with somebody or something, or family members, close friends and family often do favors for each other, and that's great. And you don't expect to be paid. That's just what friends do for each other. But whenever you're asking, even if it's a friend, it depends. I mean, if it's their service that they do, if they have a lawn mowing service and you just expect the friend to come over and mow your lawn for free because he has a, because his business is mowing lawns, that's not right. I wouldn't say that's right. But when you have close friends and you do favors for each other all the time, you don't expect to be paid for something like that. But in this case, whenever you do use somebody's service, you should pay for it in general. Jeremiah 22 and verse 13, woe unto him that buildeth his house by unrighteousness and his chambers by wrong, that useth his neighbor's service without wages and giveth him not for his work. So God pronounces a woe on somebody that would do that. I generally, unless I'm close friends with somebody, you know, I generally, if somebody does something for me, I will offer to pay them for it, you know, and most of the time I know they're going to say no anyway, but I am genuinely willing to pay somebody if they did something for me. All right, let's get to the second half of the verse. The righteous showeth mercy and giveth. So whereas the wicked borroweth and payeth not again, they're stingy, right? The righteous are merciful. They pay people for whenever they do work for them, and they give. They are willing to open their wallet widely and help people that are in need. So we should not withhold help from people who need it when we're able to do it. Proverbs 3 and verse 27. Proverbs 3 and verse 27. Have you ever wondered, like, when it's appropriate to help somebody that's in need and when it's not? And, like, what criteria would you use to figure out when you should help and when you should not help? I know that's something that I've thought about and labored over a lot in my life. Because there's always somebody that needs help, whether it's some impersonal person somewhere over on the other side of the world, or whether it's somebody you know, a family member or a friend or a church member or something, and you wonder, should I help or should I not? You ever been there? I've been there. I mean, a lot of times I always wonder. Because sometimes to, quote, help somebody is to actually hurt somebody, right? Because you are emboldening them to continue in their foolish living. So sometimes helping is actually hurting. And it's not that I always say, should I help or should I not, because I don't want to help somebody. It's because I truly want to help somebody, and I'm trying to figure out, is helping them or is helping them hurting them? And I have some good thoughts here, some practical advice on how to figure out when to help and when not to help. And really a sure way that you can know that the person that's asking for help actually needs help. And so you'll be able to figure it out without a doubt. So we'll get to that in just a second. But we should not withhold help when we can do it. Proverbs 3 and verse 27. Proverbs 3 and verse 27. It says, withhold not good from them to whom it is due when it is in the power of thine hand to do it. So if you can do good, especially if it's due to somebody, and you have the power and the ability, then you should do it. You don't want to withhold that. You see, the wicked lazy man covets all day long, but the righteous man gives liberally. Proverbs 21 and verse 25 through 26. The wicked person just wants somebody to give to him all the time, but the righteous man is the one that is giving to others who are in need. Proverbs 21, 25 through 26. The desire of the slothful killeth him, for his hands refuse to labor. He coveteth greedily all the day long, but the righteous giveth and spareth not. So you got two characteristics of wicked men. They borrow and they don't pay again. And first of all, they want to borrow from everybody. And then when they do finally borrow, then they don't pay back, right? That's what the wicked man does. Whereas the righteous man is he's the one that is lending money, and he's the one that is forward to give to those who are genuinely in need and need help. Now, when we give to the poor, we're lending unto God, and he will repay us and bless us for it. So when you think about it, it's as if the guy that you're loaning the money to has a rich billionaire that's surety for him. So when you loan to the poor, you can think about it this way. Think about it like, he's got a rich uncle that is going to pay me back. Although that's not why you should loan. You shouldn't loan hoping to get anything back. But if you're concerned about it and you're like, oh, I don't know if I should do this, maybe my own finances aren't the greatest, just think about it this way. If the guy's truly poor, he's got a rich uncle, so to speak. He's got the Lord in heaven who the Lord will pay you back. Look at Proverbs 19 and verse 17. Proverbs 19, 17. He that hath pity upon the poor lendeth unto the Lord, and that which he hath given will he pay him again. So this is one of the ways that we give to the Lord. Because if you're lending unto the Lord, you're giving unto the Lord, right? So when you give to the poor, you are giving to the Lord. That's part of your Lord's money whenever you help out the poor that are in need. Proverbs 22 and verse 9. Proverbs 22 and verse 9. He that hath a bountiful eye shall be blessed, for he giveth of his bread to the poor. The Lord will make sure that you are blessed for doing that. And even if you never get anything back from it, you're blessed anyway. It's a blessing. Like Jesus said, it's more blessed to give than to receive. It's a blessing to help somebody else out. It's even more of a blessing to help somebody else out that can't pay you back. It's like Jesus said, when you make a feast, and you're not supposed to bid your rich neighbors to come to the feast, but you bid your poor neighbors that can't repay you. And you have a more of a blessing. Maybe you wouldn't enjoy the time as much because they're not as affluent and maybe as educated or whatever. But you get more of a blessing because you're giving something to somebody that cannot pay you back. Think about the blessing that God gets by saving sinners like us by his grace. I mean, that's the ultimate can't get anything back from it, right? We have nothing to give in return. Look at Matthew 25. Matthew 25, 34 through 40. You see, when we give to people who are in need, we are actually doing it to Jesus Christ. Matthew 25, 34 through 40. That didn't look right. Matthew 25. Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, Come, ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was an hungered, and ye gave me meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me in. Naked, and ye clothed me. I was sick, and ye visited me. I was in prison, and ye came unto me. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee an hungered, and fed thee, or thirsty, and gave thee drink? When saw we thee a stranger, and took thee not in, or naked, and clothed thee? Or when saw we thee sick, and in prison, and came not unto thee? They're saying, well, wait a minute. This is at the final white throne judgment. Jesus Christ is sitting on the throne, and the Lord is blessing these people because he says, you took care of me. You came to visit me in prison. You visited me when I was sick. You clothed me when I was naked. You gave me food when I was hungry. And they say, Lord, I don't ever remember doing that at all. When did we do that? In verse 40, and the king shall answer and say unto them, Verily I say unto you, insomuch as ye have done it unto the one of the least of these my brethren, ye have done it unto me. And it works the same way when we don't do it for the brethren. He goes on to, in the rest of the chapter, to say that as well. So when we do things for the children of God, we're doing them for Jesus Christ. And when we don't do things for the children of God, we have neglected to do things for Jesus Christ. You remember when Paul was persecuting the Christians and Jesus came to him on the road to Damascus and he said, "Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me?" You know? Jesus was in heaven. Saul was not hailing Jesus off to prison, right? He wasn't scourging Jesus. He wasn't doing anything to Jesus physically, right? But Jesus said he was persecuting him when he was persecuting his people. So whatever we do to the children of God, good or bad, we are doing it to Jesus Christ. And if we give to the poor, the Lord will make sure that we don't lack. Look at Proverbs 28 and verse 27. Proverbs 28 and verse 27. "He that giveth unto the poor shall not lack, but he that hideth his eyes shall have many a curse." So when we see a truly poor person and we pretend like we didn't see that, God says we're going to have a curse for that. But if we see that truly poor person and we give unto him for his need, God says you're not going to lack. You don't worry about what's going to happen to you. I will take care of you for taking care of that poor man. But sometimes it's not quite so simple. It's not quite so easy to figure out who needs help and who doesn't. I'm going to get into that in just a second. I got just a couple of more points here. So as we have opportunity, we should do good unto all men, the Bible teaches us, but especially to them of the household of faith. Look in Galatians 6 and verse 10. So we have a duty, whenever we have opportunity, to do good unto all men. But the first people that we ought to do good to are people in the church, people of the household of faith, or in other churches. Because that's what they did in the Bible. You had the poor saints in Jerusalem. They had a dearth, a drought in the land. And Paul went around to several different churches and had them take up collections for the church in Jerusalem, for a different church, not their own church, to help them out in their time of need. We should do likewise. And I think on occasion I have asked the church, or I didn't ask you, but I said, "Hey, there is a person in another church that needs help. If you would like to give, go ahead." I know I've done that at least on one occasion, maybe on a couple other ones. But anyway, Galatians 6 and verse 10 says, "As we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially unto them who are of the household of faith." So people of faith come first, and then the rest of all men, once we've taken care of the household of faith. You know, I don't think it's a coincidence why Americans are some of the most generous, probably the most generous people on the planet. And that is a fact, I think, as far as I know. Americans give a lot to charitable causes and so on. And, you know, who knows, whatever the motives are, I don't know, but I don't think it's a coincidence that this country was founded under Christian principles and was largely Christian influenced. And even now, when the country is full of reprobates, that still that hanging on of what we were taught from the Bible to be generous and to give to those who are in need. Now, while a good man will give and lend to the poor, he will do so with discretion. And this is the thing. Psalm 112 and verse 5. We want to give, but we want to make sure that when we're giving to a righteous cause, we're giving to people who are truly in need, and when we do give to them, that we are not harming them, that we are not subsidizing their folly, that we're not keeping them in a bad situation by helping them. So we must guide our affairs with discretion, and that's, I got some things that I want to talk about with that. Psalm 112 and verse 5. "A good man showeth favor and lendeth. He will guide his affairs with discretion." So he will be wary. He will be wise and discerning. And he will use discrimination and judgment whenever he determines who he's going to help, whom he's going to help, and whom he's not going to help. And sometimes giving people money who are in need is more harmful than it is helpful. And I've seen this lots of times. I know lots of parents that do this with their kids. They give their kids everything that they want, not only when they're young, but the whole way up through high school, college, when they're out of the house. Anytime the kid comes to them with anything, they just jump to and they give the kid everything. I know my mom's got friends like this. The kids are worthless, totally worthless. And it's because the parents have given them everything. Their whole lives, they've gotten everything that they ever wanted or asked for. Anytime they get in trouble, they go back to mom and dad, and mom and dad bail them out. That's a stupid idea. And they are destroying. The kids are destroyed. The one guy's a heroin addict now. Why? Well, because parents like David never displeased him at any time. It's not a wise thing to do. So I'm going to give you my personal recommendations here. And I'm going to break it down into different groups of people and how you would address certain situations with those groups. So if someone is poor due to no fault of their own, then we should give liberally to them. This would include situations such as somebody has a serious illness that requires costly medical treatment or prevents him from working. So that's due to no fault of his own, right? He didn't do anything to get that illness. He just had a bad lot in life, and now he's in some serious trouble. That's a person that you give no strings attached to, and you help the guy out. Or if somebody gets into an accident and it disables him and causes him to have large medical bills or something. Not his fault. He didn't do anything to deserve that. That's somebody that you help out. Or somebody lost his job for a prolonged period of time due to no fault of his own. So economy goes into recession or something. You were a good employee and you lose your job, and then you just can't find one for a long time or something like that. And you're trying to find one. You're working to find one, right? Help the guy out. Or a natural disaster. Hurricane, tornado, forest fires, mudslides, whatever. That's a case where, yeah, you open your wallet wide and you help somebody like that. Now, if somebody is in financial trouble due to foolish choices and living beyond their means, then we should either not help him, or we should let him suffer the consequences of his actions, or we should help him only under certain conditions. So if you have somebody that has lived foolishly, lived beyond their means, ran themselves deep into debt, and living like a fool, if that's the case, then either you don't help them or you only help them under certain circumstances. Now, this is hard. This is hard to do. It's hard to see somebody suffering, even if it's when it's their own fault, and just say, nope, I'm not helping you. That's hard to do. But sometimes it's the right thing to do. And I'd say with adult kids, it's the right thing to do. If your adult kids, God forbid, hopefully it doesn't happen, but if they go off and I don't think it's not going to happen with Chris, I don't think. And I don't think it's going to happen with James, and I don't think it's going to happen with Maddie, and we'll find out when the other ones grow up. But you know, Lord willing, it's not going to happen. But if it did, and you know, the odds are, I mean, you got seven of them. Chances are, you know, you could have a bad egg, right? I mean, it happens to the best of them. But anyway, hopefully it doesn't happen. But if it does, I would recommend letting them crash and burn and learn from the mistake. Because if you step in and help them, they're never going to learn responsibility. And that's what I'm talking about here. So there are certain circumstances where you might help. So let's just look at some circumstances. Okay, so say the guy has no job. Okay, so if the person doesn't have a job and he has no family to help him, then help should be given for a limited, predefined amount of time. So that's what I would say. So you got a guy, no job, nobody to help him. You say, okay, I'll help you for a short period of time until you can get a job. If the job is not found in that amount of time, then the aid needs to be cut off. So whether it's a month or 2 months or 3 months or whatever you think, depending on the situation. But you give him a limited amount of time and you tell him up front, I will help you out for this short period of time, and then I will not help you out. Don't come back to me. Don't ask me. I don't care what your sob story is. I will not help you out. And you got to let him know you're serious. If a job, any job, is offered to him and he refuses it, aid gets cut off immediately. I don't care. You've been unemployed for a while and you're offered a job and you don't take it, you will not get one more penny from me. You take that job. And then you look for another job. And I don't care if you have to stay up till midnight looking for jobs after you come home and work or whatever. You take that job and then you look for a better one. But you're passing up jobs. You're not getting any help from me. I can tell you that much. What about the guy that has a job? So you got a guy that has a job. Maybe he's not been the wisest with his money. And he's got a job. Then I would say help should only be given to him contingent upon him balancing his budget. Mm-hmm. So I would not help somebody that has a job and that's just living like a fool, doesn't have a balanced budget, just going into debt, living off a credit card or whatever. I would not help a guy like that unless he balances his budget. That would be the contingent that I would put upon that. No money should be given to such a man until he provides a complete accounting of his income and all of his expenses. Now, I realize that some people are going to say, that's crazy. I'm not telling you what I make. Well, go ask somebody else for money then. You know, you are, remember, the borrower is servant to the lender. You have made yourself a debt slave, and now you're going to be treated like one. That's maybe not nice to say, but you're going to be treated like a slave, right? And if you want help from me or from this church, as long as I'm the pastor, you are going to show me your income. I want to see your income. I want to see a line item budget where all of your money is going to, all of your expenses, all of your debts. I want to see it all. And if somebody, and you don't have to provide that, but if you don't provide it, you're not getting any help. Now, if his expenses exceed his income, then enough money should be given to him to enable him to pay his bills for the current month. So, okay, he gives you a budget and he says, I'm just going to make up numbers. I'm making $3,000 a month and here's all my bills and it's costing $3,200 a month, right? So I have more bills and expenses and so on than I'm making. Okay, so you say, okay, I'll help you out this month. You're 200 bucks short this month. I'll help you out. But we're going to balance this budget by next month. If his expenses do not exceed his income, he either doesn't need help or he's not listed out all of his expenses and then he needs to do so. So he makes $3,000 a month and then he gives you his budget and it says all of my expenses are $2,800 a month. And you say, well, you don't need my help then. You should be saying you got 200 bucks a month to save, right? So either he's not listed everything, he's forgotten something or intentionally left something out because I don't want you to know that I spend 100 bucks a month at Starbucks or whatever. You know, I don't want you to know that I live like an idiot. So it's a self-correcting system, right? Because he can't really get one by on you because you see all the numbers. And if he doesn't give you all of his expenses, then he's got money left over at the end of the month. You don't get any money. So you got to list them all out. Once you list out all the expenses and where you can show me that you actually have more expenses than you have income, now we got something to work with. Okay. We should then go through his list of expenses and start cutting everything that's not absolutely necessary and reducing those that can be. So then you go through his budget and make him put it on a spreadsheet, line by line, every expense. And why do I seem to know about this system? Because I've done it.
Right.
And it worked. I think it worked. Kind of.
It did. He's not coming for
help. Yeah, he's not coming back for help anyway. So I don't know if he figured it out or what, but he's not asking for any more help. But I did it. I said, hey, you want help? Fine. Give me a spreadsheet of all your income. Gave me the spreadsheet, showed me everything. I said, okay, here, I'll help you out with the rent this month. And then here's what you got to cut out. You're going to cut this out. And in your case, you're going to need to get some more income because you're not going to be able to. You got to live in a different place or something. You're not going to be able to continue here. So this actually does work. So this could include things like cell phones. I know cell phones are like sacred that nobody could imagine getting rid of their cell phone. But, you know, there was a time for like, oh, I don't know, 5,900 and some years when everybody lived without one. So it is possible to live without one. Believe me, I would be the first one to admit that I'd probably get the shakes if I didn't have it, right? Because I use it for everything. But you know what? Well, I don't pay for it. Anyway, my brother pays for our cell phones as part of his supporting of my ministry, which is really nice. Because believe me, I wouldn't have this $700 thing if I was paying for it, I can tell you that. But anyway, cell phones, cable TV. I haven't had cable TV for like since I was in college or something. I don't know how many years ago that was, probably almost 15 or something. But anyway, How old am I? Yeah, about 15 years. So anyway, something like that. Somebody told me how much money cable TV costs. It's like over $100 a month or something like that. I was just flabbergasted. I can't imagine paying to pipe filth into your house. Who would pay to pipe filth into their house? I don't know. But anyway, that's an easy one. Cable TV, subscriptions to things. I don't know if people subscribe to magazines anymore, but other subscriptions that people pay for on a monthly basis or something, get rid of those. Memberships to things. Going out to eat, that's a big one. I mean, how many people go out to eat several times a week? And, I mean, pay who knows how much. I don't, I mean, a lot of money, right? I mean, that's, heck, for the two of us, just to go out to eat someplace cheap, we got 20 bucks in it, right? And that's about as cheap as you can get, right? And, but I see, I mean, you can go buy Applebee's, Red Lobster, any of these restaurants, and these are not fancy restaurants, but you're going to be paying, what, 20, 25 bucks a piece, probably, you know? And you got family of fours going there. I mean, that's a $100 bill easily. And people do that all the time. I mean, man, it's so easy to cut money out of most people's budgets. It's not even funny. Entertainment, going out to movies, concerts, shows, that kind of stuff, that all gets expensive. Grocery expenses, car payments. And then you get into the bigger ones now. I mean, you got serious. I mean, if that stuff doesn't get your budget under control, then you got to really start going for the jugular. But car payments, rental, house payments, so on. But anyway, most people are not living very frugally, and most people, you could probably slash hundreds of dollars out of their budget, no problem. Wouldn't even be hard. So anyway, now you go through and you start slashing all these things, and you show them, hey, you get rid of the cable, you get rid of going out to eat, you know, only go out to eat once a week or something, and you can show them, hey, I can take hundreds of dollars out of your budget right there, and you're going to be fine. And now guess what? You've actually helped the guy, right? If you give him the money that he needs, you've given him a fish, right? And that fish is going to feed him for a meal. But if you teach him to fish, as the old saying goes, you're going to feed him for the rest of his life. So when you go through his budget, and you're not being mean and you know, wanting to see all of his financial information because you're nosy, you want to actually help the guy. And now you've taught him to fish, right? You've shown him how to live within his means, and now he doesn't need your help anymore in short order. Now, if the man cuts everything that can be cut and he still doesn't have enough to make ends meet, then he must look for a higher paying job or an additional job. So you can cut the expenses to as cheap as you can get, and then if you're still underwater, then it's time to look for a better job or for another job. And you know, and that could take some time. It's not going to happen overnight. And that in such a case, if the guy has already cut everything he can and he's trying to help himself, then you could continue to help him until he gets that job or that better paying job. Now, if he's unwilling to make the cuts, then the aid should just be cut off. So you look through his budget and you say, hey, cable TV, 120 bucks a month or whatever, get rid of it. He's like, oh, I can't get rid of cable. All right, I'm not helping you then. That's it, period. I'm not helping you. So if he's not willing to make the cuts, why in the world? I mean, hey, I'm making the cuts in my own budget. Why am I going to make cuts in my own budget so I can give you money so that you can't make cuts in yours? It's crazy. So I definitely would not do that. I'm probably a bad guy to come to ask for money, for help, because I'm pretty frugal and I don't waste money on stuff that a lot of people waste money on. So when you come to me, I can cut all kinds of stuff out of your budget that you wouldn't think could be cut. So, but anyway, hey, if you want help and you really want to get yourself, you want to get your life in order, I can probably help you out. Now, helping a man in this way is truly helping him, right? You have actually helped the guy. But if this is one of your kids and you're just every month giving them 500 bucks or giving them your credit card to live off of or something, you're not helping them at all. You're hurting them. Helping indiscriminately is not truly helping the person. It is most definitely harming him. So that, I would say, is how you put into practice Psalm 112 and verse 5. A good man showeth favor and lendeth, he will guide his affairs with discretion. So there you can identify the person that whether they actually need help or not. And then you have a system in there, a self-correcting system. There's no guesswork. You've got the numbers right out in front of you if they'll provide them. If they don't provide them, then go talk to somebody else. There's no guesswork to it. You're not giving to somebody and then you're wondering, do they really need it? You know, I don't know. I mean, I kind of see how this person lives, and it seems like they waste money on stuff they don't need. And then you have this conflicted feeling, like, should I really help them? Should I not help them? This system just cuts through all that. And I have to say, whenever I thought this one up, I just thought, this is wonderful, because this just takes all the guesswork out of it. I've got no conscience issues. I've got nothing. Anybody comes to me with help, I've got the system, and it's just, it's beautiful. If I'm not trying to praise myself, but the system is beautiful, I do believe. So anyway, that will be all for tonight, and next week, Lord willing, we'll get into verse 22.